ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Brought to you by Zada Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Hi, guys. I'm Hector Moreno. You're listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show. We've got Jeff Cameron coming up in the next hour as well. Another great interview. That was some stuff there from Dwayne De Rosario. So we really appreciate Dwayne coming on. Jeff Cameron coming next. By the way, he is the current captain of QPR in the championship, played for Stoke, and, of course, is a former Dynamo as well. CONMEBOL, it'll be an all-Brazilian final between Santos and Palmeiras. This is big for Brazilian football. But right now, switching our attention to Liverpool hosting Manchester United this Sunday. By the way, this is number one and two, believe it or not, Manchester United at the top of the table. Joining us now from the Liverpool supporters group here locally in Houston, Ian Veery, good friend of the show, good friend of our soccer community. He joins us now. And Ian, thank you very much for coming on. First thing I would just say, take us into the charity idea you guys have going on at Hugh O'Connor's this weekend before we talk about the match quickly.
Okay, so, yeah, we wanted to just energize our fan base that, you know, gets groups, some of our fans that haven't been coming for a little while back into the pub with obviously everything that's been going on in the last year. So we just wanted to do a raffle and get some enthusiasm back. And then we decided that we wanted to donate the proceeds from that to the Snowdrop Foundation.
Excellent as always, and you know, Peter and everybody over there in your group has been tremendous supporters of all the cancer type charity things we've done with Snowdrop that benefits the Texas Children's Hospital. All right, let's talk about the game. Is there a concern from Liverpool with Manchester United top of the table coming into this? And by the way, you're getting a Manchester United which it seems has a very interested Paul Pogba now.
Yes, I mean, they're playing well. There could be no question. And I think the change has been the change in Pogba. I mean, the last few games they've played, he's looked very, very, very enthused. He's tracking back. He's chasing down. He's pressing. He is a different player. It's you know, it's always number one and number two. It doesn't matter where they are in the league. It's always, for the football calendar, it's always number one and number two. We could always argue who is number one or number two, but it's always the biggest game in the English football calendar.
Ian Veery joining us here, Liverpool supporters group. They're going to be out in full force. There'll be Manchester United fans down in Houston and all over the country, all over the world, tuning into this one that'll be played, I don't believe, in front of any fans at Liverpool. Ian, I want to take you into the loss of Virgil van Dijk and Joe Gomez and just how that has affected tactically Liverpool, because you had a very interesting take on this.
Well, those two have laser passes, 40, 50 yards. They were able to put balls into Salah, Mane, sometimes Bobby dropping deep. We've lost the ability to do that. I mean, Fabinho's been fantastic in there with some of the other players that we've sort of rotated through. I mean, Martip's good, but he just unfortunately can't stay upright right now. So it's changed the way, I mean, Liverpool are playing. We are not doing quick counter-attacks. We're having to slowly go through. Robertson and Trent Alexander are not able to get up like they could because we just can't get the ball there quick enough. So it's definitely tactically very different this season since Van Dijk, and then we lost Joe as well, which was a double blow.
And he also may lose Gigi Wijnaldum to Barcelona, because there's a lot of chat about that. Tell me about that, and how does Liverpool absorb that?
I think he may go. I think for him and his career, it probably is time. I mean, he wants to be paid more. I completely understand that, where he is. You know, he's won the Champions League and the Premier League and the Club World Cup with Liverpool. So, and Koeman's a big fan of his, and he's a big fan of Koeman's, obviously, from their tie-up with the Netherlands. So I honestly think he may go, which is disappointing, but is understandable. We'll see. I mean, Liverpool is still talking to him. He hasn't signed anything yet. He hasn't said he's definitely going to go. But it's going to be interesting, because we do seem to have, and since Thiago came in, we have got a lot of midfielders that really need to play.
Ian, thank you so much for coming on. Enjoy the game this weekend. This is Ian Veery from the Liverpool Supporters Group here in Houston. He's been on many of our roundtables in studio, and one day we'll get back to those, Ian, okay?
Sounds good. Glenn, great to talk to you as always.
All right, that's Ian Veery. What a great guy, and great for our soccer community. So is it time to give Ole Gunnar Solskjaer some serious respect for what he's doing for Manchester United? You remember, everybody and their mother wanted him out, said he's not the right guy for the job. Now, look, nobody's saying they're going to win the title, but look, they're right in it here. We don't know what he does behind closed doors. He is pretty coy. He is very, very calm. He doesn't show much. And we'll see what happens in the future. He is going to have to rely on his depth, though, with the amount of fixture congestion. That's how they say it in England. We would just say a heavy schedule. Guys like Donny van de Beek, I hope he gets more minutes. I mean, he was brought there for huge money. Daniel James, Brandon Williams. These guys are maybe on the fringe of it right now, but they're going to have to be a part of it, I think, in the months to come here. There's talk of Jesse Lingard getting a loan move. Phil Jones, what did they say? He remains redundant. Okay. Taking a break. When we come back, it's very rare for an American to captain a club with the history of Queen's Park Rangers. Well, that's exactly what Jeff Cameron's doing. We're also going to ask him, does he want to come back to Major League Soccer one day and potentially the Houston Dynamo? Jeff Cameron is coming up next on Soccer Matters, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Ably supported by Advantage BMW Midtown, Janish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture, and their Grace Stressless Lounge Chairs, and Hugh O'Connor's. Take a break. Jeff Cameron next.
ESPN 97.5.
I'm Vlad Kondanovsky, the coach of U.S. Women's National Team, and you're listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We roll on. This next interview is going to be a good one. This is presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, and by the way, they get soccer on the air in Houston. So think about that for a second. And support those sponsors that do support your game. And this is 18 years on the radio for me. That's pretty incredible. Strictly soccer programming. And this is exciting, this next interview. He's a guy in 2008 drafted by the Houston Dynamo. 1 year later in 2009, Major League Soccer, best 11. Played most of that season as a center back. He is currently the captain of Queen's Park Rangers in England. After that, prior to that, he had played six seasons, well over 180 games in the Premier League with Stoke City. You know him, I know him. He's Jeff Cameron. He joins us now. Jeff, thank you very much for being on this show from England.
Glenn, thanks for having me.
All right. So we got a lot to talk about here, and I know the fans and listeners are excited to hear you on the show. I want to take you into your current position now with Queen's Park Rangers. You are the captain, and when I look at the history of that club, how far back it goes, the players that played with it, I know a lot of people in America aren't that focused on the championship because they're so focused on the Premier League, but the honor of you being captain to me is really, really something special at Queen's Park Rangers.
Yeah, it's a club that is has a lot of history with Les Ferdinand being there and so on. And it's been an honor. It's been tough. I didn't realize there's a lot of stuff off the field and on a club basis that you have to deal with on a consistent basis. But I think I'm old enough and experienced enough to deal with it. And it's been a tough season so far because we've been inconsistent and unlucky with not being able to finish our chances in games and mistakes that we've caused by ourselves and, not getting 3 points when we should get 3 points and dropping points when we have and we shouldn't. But knowing when to say certain things and when not to. And I think that just comes with experience and just kind of holding guys accountable and trying to keep the standard at a high level. And but yeah, I'm 35 years old and I still got plenty in the tank and I'm running about and enjoying it. And I take it as a challenge and I want to do everything possible that I help the club and continue to be professional and set a professional standard.
All right. So before this interview, as the journalist that I am, I went back because I wanted to watch your game against Stoke on December 15th against your former team. So you're captaining QPR. You go out against your old team, Stoke, and you're moving well. You're playing. You're moving very well. Frankly, I thought you played excellent in midfield on this day. Was that emotional for you?
Yeah, it's actually been. I haven't lost to Stoke since I've left, which is it's always a good thing to know, like, because when I represented Stoke and I played for the club, I know the one thing that the fans always required, and they always required hard work. No matter what, if you had a bad game or you were off with your passes, your touches, but if you grafted and you worked your butt off, like, they were going to be happy about it. And they would always applaud you and compliment you in that way. And you'd have your fans that love you, and they have your fans that hate you. But at the end of the day, they're a working class club. And they like guys that with hard work. And that's always been, that's kind of like my DNA in my game. I'm a grafter. I work hard, and I leave it all on the field. And whether you have good games or bad games, at least I know I walked off and I said, you know, I gave it my all. And that's what I'm trying to do at QPR. But it is emotional when you play against your old club, because you've had so many amazing memories and memories that I had there where we were top 10 for three or four consecutive years. And then you have the low moments where, you know, you were relegated, and you have the highs and lows. And those were tough moments. But at the end of the day, I wore that jersey with pride, and I have amazing amount of respect for Stoke City and them giving me the opportunity to come over here and play in the Premier League. And, but yeah, it's definitely the way it kind of ended when I left. It was difficult because the manager's coming in, and they had their guys that they wanted. And, you know, fortunate enough, like, I was able, McLaren wanted me, and I came over here and, you know, went from, you know, I left Stoke and had the opportunity to go to QPR, and, you know, kind of everything is history there. And, but yeah, it's always that something sweet, you know, when you're playing against your former club and you have teammates that you got on with and teammates you didn't get on, you know, with the greatest, but, you know, you're going against them and you're like, hey, this is going to be a good game today, you know?
Jeff Cameron joining us here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, Daspit Law Firm. Talk about the pressure now. You've got the additional responsibility of being a captain. The game does have more pressure in England. I think that's pretty clear. That's still an area we want to improve in America is healthy pressure. Talk about that. I know the fans aren't there now, but on the other hand, the way you get judged pretty much every second you're in front of people, it has to be dealt with, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it comes down to, you know, your livelihood, your career. You know, at the end of the day, we all know where the world is and the situation that we're in now. But when you went from the Premier League to the Championship, your wages are cut in half. And say you have a 10-year career. If you're making X amount of money for, you know, let's say you have a 4-year deal, and two of those years you get relegated, and you knew that, like, your half your money was going to get cut, you're going to be pissed, you know, you're going to be upset. And then all of a sudden you have that on your resume and you're like, oh, next player, oh, I'm going to go to this club, going to get a good move. And yeah, guys can go and come and go. But at the end of the day, like, there is the pressure. If you don't perform as a team and as individuals that come together as a team, you have to be held accountable. And getting relegated and getting your money cut in half and then losing, there's a consequence, and you don't want that pressure. It's tough. You know, like, I was with it my first year at Stoke, and then obviously Mark Hughes came in and we played really, really well in 4 years consecutive top 10. And then, boom, relegated the next year after. So 6 year we're relegated. And then, you know, my first year, I got a taste of it for maybe a couple weeks where we were like in the bottom three, and the pressure gets on you and you don't want to make a mistake because you don't want to cost a team a goal or something like that. And then we got out of that. And then it was like, okay, pressure's off you. Okay, we'll just keep going. And you kind of go back to the way you were normally playing within yourself, with your ability, with confidence. But when that pressure's on and you're 18th in the table like we are now, like things get, you get a little nervous. And for me, being an experienced guy, I've know how to deal with it and try to remain, keep the guys positive and keep doing like, hey, you know, play your game, stay confident. Don't worry about, we're going to get together. We'll get through this together by working together as a team and us changing our luck and us getting some extra bounces here and there, things will turn. We'll turn the tide. And if everybody comes together, usually that does happen. There are moments where it doesn't, where I experience where we have individuals that weren't team players that, you know, they didn't work hard in training.
So let me stop you right there. Is the current QPR team, you as the captain, are you guys together enough right now?
Yeah. Yeah. And the good addition is we've had some, you know, conversations as a team, some heartfelt moments after games and trainings and, you know, Charlie Austin coming in and him making an immediate impact already with his experience and his personality and his persona, you could say, of a guy that has, you know, played at the club before, helped QPR get promoted, and then went off and stayed in the Premier League and had a few years at Southampton and West Brom, got West Brom promoted last year. So a guy has experience and knows what it takes. And he's playing in the attacking part of the field. So he's just another voice, another experienced lad that can tell the younger guys and give them advice and give them positive reinforcement and hold them accountable. They need to be held accountable and, you know, kind of light a match under them when they need to get, you know, kicked up the butt, you know, that's a thing where in a football culture and soccer culture, that is the essence of a team that functions properly, is being able to hold people accountable and push each other, knowing that, you know, their abilities way up here and they're underperforming, but how do you get them to perform that high but coming together as a team? What drives players? There are players that it's hard to have a conversation with because they're more introverted than extroverted, you know, like, and it's hard to have a conversation with them, but you have to find out, you know, I've had conversations with players and like, you go to the manager, I'm like, hey, Gaff, you know, I'm trying to really get him on board or trying to get him really going. Is there anything I can do? And I pull the player aside and try to give him some advice and give some confidence. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So you kind of learn and you figure out those things, but you learn that through your experience of playing for so long. And it just doesn't come like this overnight.
Let me stop you there. Through your lens now, where you've been, you're 35. You're not the rookie out of URI and WVU anymore, right? I'm thinking about your career, what you've seen, what you've experienced, right? Isn't it a beautiful place to be in?
It's amazing. It's crazy. I catch myself sometimes. I'm like, this is I've had a great career, and now, like, you know, and I have plenty in the tank, like I said, and I want to keep them playing as long as I can because I feel great. I feel fit. You know, I've only missed one or two games, and I just had a small little strain in my groin. But you know, I do all the right things. I'm professional off the field. I eat right. I do all the things that I need to do to continue to keep playing. And I'm doing that. And I'm realizing if I had all this information and I was doing all this stuff when I was younger that we have now with the science, the nutrition, everything, and putting myself in these young guys' shoes that I share a locker room with, that's what I try to teach them and try to tell them, like, you know, why are you coming in with a 400-pound pair of trainers? In another year, that's going to go out of style. You're going to want to get a new pair, you know? And it's like, be smart. Like, yeah, you can have your nice things, but don't waste your money. Don't be stupid with that kind of stuff. Or, you know, like, should you really be having McDonald's after a game or things like that? And when you're young, you don't think of these things. It's just like, it's easy, you know? But
do you worry that the game is for players is becoming a little laden and heavy towards image and brand, and you know, because I kind of feel that on the outside now, you know, I feel like I want more talk about what's going on in the field, the players, their history of Jeff Cameron, where he came from, how he got to where he, And I worry sometimes that the players might be slightly more concerned about brand and imaging than they are actually about playing the game.
Yeah, I guess you could say, like, for me as a player that's getting a little older, I should be start worried about my brand and image, where these young guys, they're like starting out and like their focus should be just getting down, keep your head down and like, and just grind and make a name for yourself and let your football be, let your soccer do the talking. And I find it really interesting. And the thing is, it's good because I have a lot of, I'm sure in the dressing room with, you know, 17, 18 year old guys, and you have 19 year olds, you have 22 year olds, you have 25 year olds, you have, you know, it's a very drastic, you know, difference between, you know, me being one of the older guys with Adoma and Charlie, who's 31, 34, 35, you know, guys that are experienced. And then you have guys that are super young. And these guys are acting like, some of the guys are, you know, posting pictures and we'll joke around with the Instagram, like they all wear the same gear or they all want to act like they're up here, like they're like Paul Pogba, you know, who's making £400,000 a week or something ridiculous like that. And you're making not even and a 16th of that, you know, and it's like, you got to start somewhere. And that's my point. We kind of always joke around with the guys, like, you don't need that stuff. Like, and that's where it's such a change from when I started out in Houston, when, you know, I played with Brian Ching, Richard Mulrooney, Brian Mullen, Craig Weibel, Wade Barrett, Dwayne Rosario, Pat Onstad. I mean, Pat Onstad, he was ruthless, you know, like I was coming in the dressing room and he's 41 years old, you know, and he's a grown man. You know, and I'm a young kid coming from college and I'm like, oh, like, welcome to the big boys now. Like I'm sharing dressing room with adults, with guys that have families and everything. And but I think that made me accelerate so much quicker than I could have imagined, because I had so many guys around me with so much experience that were.
Let's talk about that. You get drafted. It's after the two cups. So you just came right after the two cups. So you're the new guy on the block on a two-time, two-in-a-row MLS Cup champions. You got a head coach in Dominic Kinnear who holds people as accountable as anybody will, right? With the type of players he's picked, you can realize the type of person that he's looking for as well. You got leaders strewn throughout this team everywhere, right? All the guys we just mentioned, and I'm sure we probably missed a few as well.
Yeah, Brad Davis, you can add on that.
Brad, you put Brad in there as well, who probably was the last great leader of the Dynamo. So you have to say to yourself, I mean, you couldn't have been dropped into a better team with all your raw, good ability.
Eddie's going to kill me for this.
Eddie Robinson, we got to get in there,
Robinson,
too.
Eddie Robinson, you got to get
in there. He's my TV partner. How can I forget it?
How can I forget? I forget.
Eddie's going to crush me for that one. But you know, there you are. And when you look back now, you have to say that was a masterstroke for you and your development, because you could have ended up on any team in MLS, maybe with a bad locker room, maybe in a place that – you wouldn't 100%. Have been held accountable right from the word go.
And I would have just been another number, another guy, another young guy to come in and go and not get experience, not get. But I also think it has to come down with your mentality as well. When I went into Houston, I think we had eight rookies that came that year, or eight or nine. And I think only two or three lasted the entire year. And I was one of them. And it was interesting because a lot of the guys in the beginning, they don't really talk to you much because they know it's kind of like, if eight guys, rookies coming in, there's probably going to be six going out or they won't last because it's cutthroat, but it's not as cutthroat as over here in England. But that's just because they're a little bit of ahead in development and in the business sense of it. And it's more their livelihood. But it was cutthroat in the point because it was being Dom and his staff had that kind of – it was a kind of a European environment. A lot of the guys were U.S. internationals. They were experienced, and they knew what it took to train every day and be professional and do all the right things. The guys that were older, they wouldn't have played as long as they have if they weren't professional. And I remember my first training session, and Dom put all the young guys on one team. And then he put like this, the second team, it was three team, like basically keep away, possession. And I remember I looked around like, we're going to get absolutely popped here. Yeah. Like just, we won't touch the ball. And the other team was the guys that had maybe two or three years experience. And then the third team was all the veterans. And it was like the eight guys versus their veterans. And then you had a chance at playing against like the second and third team experience guys. And that was the only time you're actually really going to touch the ball. But Dom wanted to see who would be able to stand up and fight and scrap and basically become a man. And I think Dom kind of told me, you might have to get him and ask him, but he told me it was like within the first day or second day of training, he knew that I was going to succeed. And it was a play where I got the ball and I nutmeg Richie Mulrooney, and he'll probably deny this, but Richard, like he's a feisty player, but like nicest guy off the pitch. Like he wouldn't hurt a fly, but he was ruthless on the pitch.
I put
the ball between his legs, and I ran around him, and I just turned around, and he just turned around and two-footed me. I went right out, and I just got up and I played. I didn't even complain, nothing. And Dom just said, you know, like kind of said, like, you'll have a great career here. Just keep your head down, you work your butt off, and the rest will do, you know. And that's kind of been the story of my career. And, you know, fortunate enough, I was able to get experience from Eddie Robinson, Craig Weibel, Brian Mullen, and they would constantly talk to me. Pat Onstad would scream my head off. And because he knew the ability, saw the potential in me, and he would make sure that I wouldn't drop or become overconfident or put me in my place when I needed to be put in. And that was a really, really good dressing room. And I think that's why they were so successful for so many years.
Yeah, I love the accountability that players held each other to on those teams. And I remember, you know, covering the team and being at practices, and the intensity of the practice is amazing. So that's part one with Jeff Cameron. When we come back, part two, quick word here for Advantage BMW Midtown. Getting an Advantage BMW Midtown vehicle. Now, I've driven a BMW for years. I've leased and bought from Advantage BMW Midtown numerous times. I love the drive of the vehicles, driving an X5 right now. The other thing I love at Advantage BMW is the customer service. It's second to none. Advantage BMW has you covered, sales, service, finance. It can be done so easy. Get in a 3, a 5, a 7 series, or get in one of those SUVs. Advantage BMW Midtown, proud sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Part 2 of Jeff Cameron, right around the corner.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Quick word here for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Big thank you to John and his firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. You get in an accident, car, boat, motorcycle. You might drive an 18-wheeler or work in a refinery, or you might work in construction. Call the Daspit Law Firm. Bilingual, 713-322-HURT. Daspit Law Firm is going to bring you a personalized approach. They'll work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. Get the representation you need with the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. Here is part two with Jeff Cameron of Queens Park Rangers. We're talking to Jeff Cameron here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. All right, so since we're on the topic of Major League Soccer, I have to ask this question, and I know everybody out there. Is there ever a chance, if the situation was right, that you might come back to Major League Soccer and finish your career in the States? I mean, is that something you want to do? Do you prefer to stay in Europe? What are you open to?
Yeah, you know, like I'm coming towards the end of my contract at QPR, and Don't know where that's going to go, but you know, for me, playing the amount of games I have this year and how I'm feeling and where my mindset is, I know I have years left in me, and I'm proving that. I think it would have to be the right opportunity, right, and given the right team, and you know, for me, I'm not going back to, I wouldn't go back to the MLS just to go back and, you know, put my feet up and, you know, retire. That's not my mentality. I want to go back and I want to do something. I want to perform. Now, if it was back to the Houston, that would be a pretty cool story and kind of where I started. And, you know, I went over to England and did my thing, and I want to come back and I want to continue to do my thing and, you know, help the team get back to where it was before. Yeah, that would be a great story. But at the end of the day, it would be come down to the situation of one, who would be interested, and two, if it was right for me personally, you know, and where the club was headed in the right direction. You know, are they pushing for something? Do they want to win? And, you know, I don't want to go to a team where there's no drive, essentially, because over here we do have a drive. Every team has a drive to make it to the playoffs and get to the Premier League. And, you know, I played in the Premier League. I also know what the expectations are every single game. And we have the players now at QPR to do that. We're just a little bit young and naive, and we need a little bit more experience. And that's what I'm trying to help. And there are other teams that, you know, went from the Premier League, and they'd probably go straight back up because they're relegated and they have their experience together. So, yeah, I'm definitely open to it. Like I said, it would have to be the right decision.
Talking to Jeff Cameron here. By the way, it's a decision that includes two other people, Ariel and your son, Caleb.
Yeah.
Life obviously has changed now. Tell me about life changing now, having a son, and what that does to somebody from the perspective of being a professional athlete now having a child.
It's definitely different, you know, for sure. It's instead of being selfish throughout most of your career, you're putting someone else first, and you're doing the things for essentially for him now. And I kind of say, like, it's actually given me another drive. It's, you know, it's made me push on even more, and I'm more hungry now because I want to do the best and I want to do the best for him. And I'm at a point in my life where, like, I think if I were to have had him earlier, I think it would have been a different story, because I don't think I was right mentally, selfishly. I wasn't ready for that moment. But in the state I am now, like, it's almost encouraged me to keep doing the right things, to keep pushing on. And I want to play as long as I can until, like, you know, I like to say I could play till I'm 40, but I don't know. But I definitely have, you know, 3 to 4 years left in me for sure, because one thing is I do everything right off the pitch, and I do, you know, my off seasons are good. I do the right training. I do the right things. And like I said, it's just given me another drive, and I want to make him proud. I want to be a good example for him. And that's like my mentality now. And the thing is, like, when you're a bit older, you can sit back and your rest is important. So, like, when I'm home and I can relax, I can play with him and just rest and kind of hang out. And, you know, when you're a little younger, you always want to do things and this and that and kind of get yourself about. But now it's like coming home and spending time with him, and that's my most important thing.
Jeff Cameron joining us here. And if you remember, he was a draft pick 2008. He was in the third round. He was a 42nd overall. Came to the Houston Dynamo after their two MLS Cup triumphs. 1 year later in 2009, amazingly, MLS best 11 at center back. I mean, that's incredible to come in your second season and be a best 11 player. I want to take you back to a Premier League moment. Your 40th game at Stoke, you score your first Premier League goal, and it happens to be against Arsenal at the Emirates. Take me back, reflect on that goal, because what a moment.
It was my left foot too, which is, it was a pretty surreal moment, because Arsenal was one of my favorite teams growing up. Because, you know, when in the States, they only showed a few Premier League games over in the States, and it was usually like Man United, Arsenal. They had some Liverpool games, not as much as they do now, and that was kind of really it. And they had Chelsea as well. But Arsenal was my team. They kind of played good football, and I kind of followed them. And I always loved their stadium. And to be honest, it's still the best pitch to play on. Like the pitch, the grass is perfect. It's a putting green there. It's literally amazing. So like my first time going.
But wait a minute. Let me hold you there. Putting green field. You definitely don't want to come back to the New England Revolution and play on the artificial surface that you let.
No.
Okay, we'll count them out.
And we know who's the manager there, so I wouldn't be playing there anyways.
I wasn't gonna go there, but you brought it up, Jeff Cameron.
Yeah, it's all right. It's all good fun, right?
Coaches, players, and managers have problems. It happens.
Yeah, of course, it is what it is. But no, it is the best pitch I've ever played on, and probably one of the. It's a really, really cool stadium to play in, and just going there and, it was like kind of like when I hit it, I was like, oh my God, I scored, you know, like it was like arms out. And I was just, I had the happiest smile. And I can actually, it's funny. My dad sent me a picture, a video, like, I think maybe you posted it or maybe the Dynamo did like a throwback Thursday. It was like kind of my first start for Houston. We played FC Dallas at home and I had that.
Smashed that one in from outside the 18.
And I had the assist before that to Ching. And I just remember when I scored, I hit it. I didn't know, like, I was just so happy I scored. It was so hot. And I had the same grin that I had when I scored against Arsenal. It was kind of funny. Probably because I was just like, did this really just happen? But, it was a great moment. It was a great moment.
Talking to Jeff Cameron here, and this has been a tremendous interview. Take me into the success now of the American player. Now, look. You're a part of the whole, you know, this whole platform where the American player started off training with teams way, way back to, you know, you get John Harkes breaking a barrier. It keeps going up. You get into the Premier League. Now we're seeing Weston McKennie at Juventus, Tyler Adams at Red Bull Leipzig, Gio Reyna at Borussia Dortmund. You got to be
Christian at Chelsea,
Christian Pulisic at Chelsea, and that's just only a few of them. Sergiño Dest at Barcelona. How do you feel about that right now? Because it's remarkable how much more coveted it seems and respected the American player is. And you've been a part of it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, with Tim Howard and, you know, our goalies have been known to the American goalies have always been known. Like we've always had really good goalies, you know, Tim, Brad Friedel, Casey Keller, Brad Guzan. They've been over here for a while and experienced it, but like, it was just more American players. And then Clint came over, Brian McBride. And they kind of really made a name from, you know, specifically Clint, where, you know, to Fulham, to Spurs. And it was kind of like, wow, like being another American over here. And I think I only needed a couple more games to kind of tie Clint up for most amount of player appearances. And I'm sure Christian will crush that. But it's great because you see the quality that is, you know, has happened over U.S. soccer and people might not want to say it, but you give Jurgen credit because he was pushing players to go to Europe and pushing their development over, you know, in Germany and in England and wherever. And you look at it now, look at where they all are. I mean, Christian wouldn't have gone down the path of, there wouldn't be a Christian Pulisic if he didn't sign for Dortmund when he did, and if he stayed and would have signed for, you know, the Philadelphia Union, essentially, he wouldn't have been that path. And it has nothing to do with talking negative against MLS. At that point in time, their academy systems weren't set up, and they weren't set up to develop players the way they're set up over here.
Remember how much of a pushback Jurgen Klinsmann got for that? And I always thought that was the strangest. Why are you pushing back? You're always going to want your players to be ambitious to go to Europe. Why wouldn't you?
And that was, it came to the point in my career where I had the opportunity and said, like, you know, there was West Ham, there was Everton and Stoke that were in. And I think maybe West Brom as well. But I remember having the conversation and I just said, you know, at the end of the day in my career, I don't want to question my ability and say, like, was I good enough to play abroad? Was I good enough to play in Europe at the highest level I can possibly play in? Or should I just stay in the MLS and, you know, try to be the best player in this league and continue and have a good long career? No problem. Mm-hmm. And I could have done that, but my dream and my goal as my ambition as a player was always wanted to challenge myself and get to the highest level. And I always dreamed about playing in the Premier League, and that was where I wanted to go. So having that opportunity, I was like, you know what? I don't want to sit back after, you know, if I played 15 years or 20 years and look back and say, was I good enough to play? Woulda, coulda, shoulda. And I didn't want that. Because, you know, at the end of the day, if I were to retire now and people say, oh, Jeff Cameron was a terrible player, well, I don't care if you think I was a terrible player or not. I have 180 appearances in the Premier League. You know what? I have how many years playing in England? How many games in with the national team? You can say what you say, but how many other Americans have come over here and played? How many Americans have come over here and weren't successful? Well, you know what?
You're risking it too, and that's going to take me to when you arrived initially to where you are now. When you arrived initially, and we're talking to Jeff Cameron, the former U.S. international, played in the 2014 World Cup, played in the first two matches against Ghana and Portugal, then in the round of 16 against Belgium in two different positions, by the way. But when you first arrived there, there was probably skepticism, you being an American, right?
Yeah.
Like, you had to prove yourself.
I have to prove myself. And it was funny because I have, you know, a really good friend of Cameron Jones of my, you know, and when he was there, and he was more friendly. He was one of the friendliest guys when I first got there. And it was hard because when I joined Stoke, because of the transfer, my like FIFA license or whatever wasn't passed or wasn't fully cleared yet. So I wasn't allowed to play in any friendlies until our last friendly, which was against, I think it was Wolfsburg in Germany. I think it was Wolfsburg. I could be wrong on that team, but it was in Germany. And I trained every single day, did the double sessions of preseason, this and that, but I couldn't play in the games. And then the guys would, you know, they were like, oh, he can play, he's a decent player in training, but how many players have we played with? And they were like, oh, great, he's a great practice player, but when it comes to a game, you know, he's terrible. You know, some guys are good in games, some guys aren't. And after the game, I played defensive midfield, and after the game, Cameron came up to me. He's like, you got everybody's respect now. And a bunch of the English guys came up to me, and they were like super happy and like kind of like more talkative and kind of more friendly to me. And I was like, all right, this is all right. You know, because it was more like kind of by myself, essentially, like in my first 3 or 4 weeks there. And it was just, you earn the respect, you earn the right. And that's what I did. And I proved myself, you know, I proved to them, like Americans can play and I'm good enough to play here. And, you know, the rest speaks for itself, but it does. And it was interesting because Clint always said, you know, you always have to kind of prove yourself and you kind of have to play with a chip on your shoulder a little bit. And, you know, and look at what Clint did. He absolutely balled it over here. And you know, the Christian, you know, what Christian's doing, he's got the number 10 jersey for Chelsea. He's a great kid, focused. He's, you know, he comes over here pretty often and we have dinners together and stuff. But he is so driven and he wants to prove, you know, he can be the best and he can take his game higher than anyone has ever, you know, played in for the U.S. And he's doing that now. And he's got that drive and he's got that kind of chip on his shoulder a bit and he wants to, you know, turn people's heads and he's doing that. So yeah, it's definitely Americans abroad definitely have a little bit more pressure, but Americans have proved that we can play.
Maybe we don't want to ever lose that drive and desire. Let's hope it stays.
No, because that is our DNA. That is our it's always been our thing whenever we play with it, and I think that's what the national team has missed a bit. I think it's kind of slowly coming back with the guys with experience and kind of, I would say for the last couple of years, you're watching the national team and you're like, whew, you know, where's that fight? Where's that grit? Where's that passion? And I think it's slowly coming back and you're seeing it and knowing Christian, I know he hates to lose and his willingness to fight and you kind of see that starting to creep back with the national team. But that's the one thing the Americans always like, they'll always work harder. They'll always fight for one another because they're united. They're stuck to, you know, they're a team. And when you play against teams that have better players and, you know, better quality, what's the team? The only way to beat them is more work ethic, you know, your work ethic, your desire, your willingness to fight for one another. And I think that's why, you know, teams that are really good teams, they're really good because they have great ability, but they have the willingness to come together as a team and be selfless and work together. And I think, you know, the moments when you share that are when you're playing really, really well and things are flying, those are the best moments in your career because you're enjoying it. And the team is such a great atmosphere. And I think that's where I always have the great memories when I was in Houston. Even if you didn't get on with guys, you still had that great camaraderie and you have that banter. And yeah, it was, yeah.
Jeff, I want to thank you for this fantastic interview. I know it's a long one. I know you've had to stay up a little bit later because of the time difference. It's been a pleasure catching up with you. I want to wish you the best of luck on Saturday against Wycombe Wanderers. Keep it up. We're enjoying watching you, and we can watch that game on ESPN. So thank you very much for coming on tonight. And
always a pleasure, Glenn, and anytime, man.
Thanks again.
Well, that does it for Soccer Matters here tonight. A big thanks to our great guests on this show, the legendary Dwayne De Rosario and Jeff Cameron. We thank both of them for coming on the program. Good interviews there, real in-depth. Maybe more of a podcast type feel because of the length of those interviews, but those guys have so much opinion and so much to say and have done so much in the game of soccer that we wanted to take these a little bit deeper. All right, we'll be back next Tuesday. A big thank you to Aaron Raybould, as usual. Big thank you to David Obert for helping get things sorted out here in the home studio. So a big thank you to David and all of our sponsors, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Also, Advantage BMW Midtown, Hugh O'Connor's, where we'll have that big Liverpool-Manchester United game on Sunday out on I-10 in the Marquee Entertainment Center. And then, of course, also the Jan Christensen and Danish Inspirations. Hit me up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Facebook Soccer Matters. Get over to glenndavissoccer.com. That is the end of the shameless promotion here. And we will call it a night. On behalf of the firm, I'm Glenn Davis. Thanks for tuning in.
ESPN 97.5.